It is Friday, March 11th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Parton, or Digby, from the blog Hullabaloo, and columnist at Salon.com. And also on the program today, a follow-up to our interview on Flat Earthers this week, Peter McIndoe will be with us from BirdsAren'tReal.com. Meanwhile, Russia-Ukraine talks breakdown. Don't come close to a ceasefire. Still ongoing, however, I guess. Meanwhile, Russia bombs western Ukraine as its military begins to encircle Kyiv and continues to pound Mariupol. Joe Biden to call for suspending normal trade relations with Russia. The Senate passes a $1.5 trillion budget package. As COVID relief dries up, they're going to take another bite at that apple. Meanwhile, House Democrats begin to press Joe Biden for use of executive action, salvage something out of the 2022 midterms. Iran nuke deal now near collapse over a last-minute demand from Russia. They're worried about Iranian oil hitting the market. Biden administration reportedly ready to end Title 42 at the southern border. Baseball is alive, ladies and gentlemen. New opening day, April 7th. And a new report, people in poverty are five times likelier to get audited by the IRS. Parents earning less than $25,000 a year claiming earned income tax credits, getting the bulk of those low income and of a disproportionate, obviously, auditing by the IRS. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today. We had a little technical difficulties. This is our second attempt at a show. Yes, it is not Groundhog Day. No, we just decided to do it all again. Hopefully, the streams are all up. And I assume if people are saying this is a false flag and Groundhog's Day, it is people are watching this. I lost the email with the from the viewer who had talked about an opportunity. Listener Jenk, I think his name was, or Jenik, excuse me, and sent us an email saying that he is in Poland at the border with Ukraine, and there's an opportunity for people to send supplies to help Ukrainian refugees. Let me, I get it right here. It's from Janik. I'm currently in Przemyśl. I can't pronounce it. It's a Polish word. I can't pronounce it. Helping with refugees. Many of the refugees have to go here first before heading west, since it's a train station right on the border. A lot of people are wondering where to help, and there's an address below that goes right to the train station where all these people are for days before relocating. If any of your viewers want to send pillows, blankets, baby formula, I would imagine diapers, here would be a great place to send it. There's no middleman, no red tape, etc. So what you write on the package is for refugees, and then there's an address. We will put that in the blog and in our YouTube and Twitch descriptions. Just one caveat. I have no way of confirming this is all real. I can tell you that I'm familiar with the emailer. The emailer checks out, and I have no reason to believe that he's lying about this. So just, you know, be aware of that. But I think this is a good opportunity if you want to send some stuff to help these refugees. I imagine there's going to be refugees for some time to come. Already nearly 2 million, maybe plus, have left the country. And I think millions internally displaced. It's getting incredibly brutal there. I mean, it has been, and it continues to be so, I guess, is really the best way to put that. Meanwhile, I'll go get to that accident thing maybe next week. Get moving here a little bit quicker. But, yeah, better not to to talk about that. Just wanted to let you know that today's program sponsored by SunsetLakeCBD.com. Use the coupon code LEFTISBEST. You will get 20% off of anything you purchase there, which includes tinctures. They've got great tinctures, been a huge boon to my sleep. They also have smokables, keef. They have pre-rolls. They have flowers. They also have a salve with arnica and CBD in it. And Dorsey comes in the other day. And Dorsey, tell the folks what you told me. Now, I use it, you will notice, completely gone. Just completely dried up. Has not been a problem. I use it for my eczema. It's meant for sore muscles, but it worked on my eczema, so I kept doing it. And then, of course, Dorsey just applying it to all over his body. What did you find?
I stumbled upon it being a really good beard wax, kind of like conditioner and styler, and it's great. I love it. It smells good too.
I don't know why they haven't developed that already, but maybe the arnica and the existing CBD, it already works as that. So, but they also have CBD fudge and coffee and gummies. All of their products have a tremendous amount of integrity. They're third-party tested. All of the results are on the website. Great business practices. They are movement partners. They've donated thousands to things like strike relief funds and soup kitchens and to give directly and to immigrant rights. Just a great, great company. Very proud to have them as a sponsor. Sunset Lake, CBD.com. Coupon code left is best. We'll get you 20% off. Okay, let's bring in. We're going to play these clips. We'll play them with Heather. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll bring Digby on. Quick break. Be right back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report with me now, the proprietor of the Uber blog, Hullabaloo. Bear with us, Digby. We do not have your theme song today. I am very
sorry. That's okay.
You're going to have to hum it to themselves. appreciate your coming on today. And a couple of things I want to talk about. You know, we'd exchanged a text, and it is it's an odd time right now because, of course, the war in Ukraine is, and we should really say, I mean, it's I think most accurately described as a Russian invasion of Ukraine. I don't, you know, I don't think that's a controversial statement, at least with most people. It is obviously drawing a lot of attention. But we still have domestic politics that are both associated with that and, you know, just our own domestic politics. I mean, let's just start with one thing. And I want to talk about the we will circle back to that. But we should also say today is officially the 2-year anniversary of the World Health Organization declaring the pandemic. I know that in New York, it was March 13th, I believe, that we totally shut down 2 years ago. And we're in a very odd place. I just went out and did my first live show in those 2 years. But at the same time, I also know that in New York, in the tri-state area, we're starting to see a slight uptick from the Omicron second variant. And, you know, it remains to be seen how much traction that gets because people are going to start being able to go outside more. But also all the masks are off. I mean, for the most part, this event I went to, I'd say about 60-70% of people wore masks. Just your thoughts about this, and particularly since we just passed a budget where there's no COVID money. And they're going to go back to it. But we're in a weird place right now.
Yeah, we are. It's kind of depressing, really. I wrote about this for Salon this morning, this whole idea that, you know, we're 2 years in, and what it's told us about our culture is, to me, really disturbing. I mean, it's disturbing. And about our politics, to be honest. I mean, yes, we are in a position now where it's obvious that the Omicron surge, our latest surge, we've had three of them so far since in the last 2 years. This one, you know, rose very quickly and has now receded very quickly, which is great. And I think everybody's happy about the idea that we're now going out and being able to, you know, be free. More or less again, and I don't think anybody argues with that. But the Sturm und Drang that has gone along with all of this, with the government response, with trying to get people to you know, behave in some kind of a collective way. And I mean, I think that, you know, my piece was about this idea that somehow or another it exposed the fact that our already fragile social contract was really broken. And we can see that with the way that our politics sort of intruded on something that was a national emergency, a crisis that hit every single person in the country. And so we couldn't come together enough to do that. Right now, outside of Washington, D.C., you've got a bunch of truckers going around in circles outside the Beltway to protest vaccine mandates, which there really aren't any other than individual businesses that are doing that. But, you know, for the most part, there's certainly no federal vaccine mandate. And yet, you know, they have found this as a motivation, an inspiration to get together and hold this protest for something that doesn't exist around something like COVID. And to me, I mean, you know, I think you remember when we went through the Obamacare wars and the Tea Party and all that, the protests that happened around, you know, trying to provide affordable health care for people. And you can see it there. There's a faction in our culture that is just so kind of, you know, fanatically individualistic that they're willing to say, they're willing to die and have other people in their lives die rather than join with their political enemies or people on the other side in their minds even for something like that, even for something like this, where people, and as a result, now we're looking at almost 1 million dead, and it's probably going to exceed that before this is all over, a number that's was unthinkable. I mean, you remember Trump said back at, yeah, I don't know, it was, you know, 2 years ago, we get to 70,000 people, you know, it's not going to go any higher than that. And, you know, literally we're almost at 1 million deaths and counting. And, you know, all it did was basically solidify the opposition and the hostility toward any kind of mitigation and even vaccination, which would even help, you know, themselves, which would keep them out of the hospital. So to me, this is a depressing moment because I realize something about our culture that we have a culture war here and there are almost 1 million dead in that war. That's how I look at it. And you know, I mean, at least they say that at least 300,000 or 400,000 of that million were unnecessary deaths because right. of the opposition to vaccines and what have you. So it's a big bummer.
Bummer. You know, we're seeing obviously deaths are happening around the world, but the death rate that we have here, I mean, and it's the other thing that is astonishing to me. I mean, you know, I guess I'm not as, I mean, I guess maybe it's just because we're 2 years into it and I've gotten used to the idea that there is a significant portion of the country that is just sort of, I'm going to be against vaccinations just because, I mean, in many respects, or I'm going to be against, you know, sort of believing in COVID because, you know, I think, look, the right has been on an extended project back when I wrote that FUBAR back in 2006, we quoted, I think it was Gertrude Himmelfarb, who was, Bill Kristol's, I think, mom, talking about attacking science because we don't want there to be some type of objective reality. I mean, this was part of and parcel of a conservative project. Mm-hmm. What I think is also to add to the how disturbing things are, we're 2 years out. We have no way of really assessing the impact of long COVID. We have no way of really tracking the implications of things like, you know, these new variants. I mean, we haven't set up the amazing thing, I guess, what I'm trying to articulate is we haven't set up any type of apparatus to deal with the potential of another wave. Like, you know, after, you know, Delta was a complete shock to everybody, I think. And I will have to say that, you know, one of our guests, one of our regular guests, Dr. Mark Elaine Derry, said to me in April of 2020. I said, what is it that scares you the most about this? And he said, COVID 2023. And the idea being that he knew there was potential for these variants to be rolling around. Didn't know what they would be called. But there does not seem to have been, like, we don't have apps to do any, contact tracing. We have no system that has been put in place that we could fire up in a moment. You know, we've got on Flatbush Avenue, there's like about 12 vans that will do COVID testing, but you go in and the PCR tests come back 5 days later, 6 days later. They're useless in that regard. And they're just basically scams now, it seems to me, for the most part, because you can get an antigen test. You can buy one. We should have, you know, they're handing them out free through the government. And you can get a second round of those, incidentally, now. You can get your second four because nobody's bothered to get them for the most part. But we haven't created any systems at all. And we're 2 years into this. And I don't know. It's possible Omicron, you know, baby Omicron comes and is as problematic as Omicron is. We would have a better sense of how dangerous it is if we had set up apparatus for this. But there's nothing. I mean, I think it goes to your point that it's not, maybe it's about the right on some level. Maybe like there was just too much of a resistance there that couldn't be overcome when people are exhausted. But it's really disturbing. And it shows, you know, I think a failure, just going back to, you know, things like Reagan and Clinton saying, you know, the era of big government is over. I mean, it's just the attitude that's been created by our politicians.
Absolutely. And all of this, this mistrust in the institutions, the institutional failure, which I think is, you know, that's undeniable. The CDC and the rest. I mean, remember back in the beginning, they had to develop their own test. And so, you know, we got way behind the curve on that. And you know, our politics have just become, I mean, the culture war uber alles here. You know, I mean, it's all about the culture war. And that has, you know, infected everything that the government does. I mean, and just this week, and this has nothing to do with Donald Trump or anything, they, you know, the Congress was had to remove the COVID funding, as you mentioned, from the big omnibus funding bill. Because, first of all Republicans were against it, so that there was no crossover on that. And then they, because they were having to pull money back from certain states, apparently the deal that they'd struck to get perhaps the 10 senators they need in the Senate to overcome the filibuster on the omnibus, they had to make a deal that they would pull back money from certain states that had money left over from earlier COVID. That upset certain Democrats who were from states that they were going to lose money, places like Washington and I think Michigan and some others. So they came in and said, no, we're not going to go along with that. So in order to get the omnibus bill passed, which they had to do, there was a deadline, they removed that. Now, to me, that's the most, this is the most short-sighted thing I can imagine. It's just as you say, I mean, you know, there is absolutely no guarantee that there's not going to be another wave. If anything, most of the epidemiologists, I mean, I have one of those lists on my Twitter feed, you know, that you follow all these scientists. I check it, you know, every day. And they're all going, this is crazy. Of course, it is almost guaranteed that there will be another wave. And yes, we have certain abilities now. The vaccinations make a huge difference. We sort of understand that we need certain kinds of masks in those situations. We've been through it enough that maybe there's just sort of a muscle memory on how some of the institutions will react. But as you say, there's no system in place and no, apparently, after all we've been through, there doesn't seem to be even any appetite for creating one, as far as I can tell, no. Among the politicians. I mean, this just seems weird to me. Look what they did after 9/11. I mean, I'm still taking off my shoes to get in an airplane. And you know, there's been no reassessment of any of that, you know, terrorism, you know, stuff. So what is it about this? What is it about COVID that makes people unable to grasp that this is a new world here we're dealing with?
I have seen a couple of people on Twitter, and I certainly came to this feeling, too, that, you know, one of the things that I remember 2 years ago was this sense of, like, you know, people started paying attention to the 1917 flu.
Right.
And realizing, like, wow, that thing was more or less erased from our history. I mean, there's, there seemed to be no appetite to talk about it. Like, even if you crack open a couple, and I did a couple of books about it, like almost all of them, the preface or the first chapter is, this is a story that's barely told and no one bought it. And I think to some extent I don't know if this is taking place in other societies, but I think there is some sort of human reaction, which is, I'm going to ignore this because I mean, you look at how much We, the Biden administration now, it seems to me, is guilty of this, too. Like, we're going to will COVID away.
Right.
We've decided it's over, so it's over. And I think that's like a human response to, like, can't do anything about it. Like, you know, this isn't, you know, and who knows if earthquakes lasted for 2 years, if tsunamis lasted for 2 years. Or a year, let's say, or a hurricane lasted for a year. Maybe at one point you would just be like, going to just ignore it. I'm just going to ignore it. I'm going to try and ignore it. And I'm going to walk out. And if I can't swim through this, then I'm done. You know, like I think this is just a natural, a natural phenomena that at one point human beings just, I'm going to pretend it doesn't exist because I can't control it. And
yeah, I think you're probably right. But I do think one of the things that has made all the difference, and we really can't forget this, is the vaccines, which are medical miracles. It has changed everything. If they had been unable to do that, if they were dealing with a situation like HIV, which they still don't have a vaccine for, and struggling to find some kind of medical interventions that would help, I mean, it would be beyond, you know, our capacity to deal with. I mean, it would be many, many millions of people. There are millions of people all over the world, but I mean, it would be a global catastrophe that's unmatched. Let's thank our lucky stars for that. I mean, I'm absolutely, I'm very, 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 happy and grateful that they were able to do that.
Have you seen any videos that would tease this out? I mean, it's sort of hard to compare apples and oranges, how people's behavior would have changed had they not been vaccinated. But I mean, we can just look at this, I think we're down to about close to 1,200-1,300 deaths a day right now. But yep, we were up well into, close to 3,000 again during Omicron. And Omicron was that much more, contagious. And without the vaccines, we could be in this country at 5-6 million deaths. And I just was thinking about this today, that day that I got my first vaccination. Like, if somebody had told me, look, you're going to have to come in every 4 months for this, or every 3 months for the shot, I would have been like, okay.
Me too. I'm still okay with that. If they tell me tomorrow that we've all got to get a whole new series of them, I'm ready to go. To me, that's one of the things that I find so disturbing about this, is that we have this medical miracle. We have a lot of them. I mean, the treatments that are coming down the pike, the monoclonal antibodies and all that stuff. I mean, this is all super, super advanced, sophisticated medicine that's just come online like that. I mean, that we were able to do it. It's the one huge success story of this whole thing. It is the one thing that we can look to. And by the way, it's the most important thing. So, grateful for that. Thank you. I'm totally prepared for the fact that this is going to be a part of our lives going forward. I mean, everybody says that, this probably isn't going to be the only pandemic. There may be something even, completely different that's not a coronavirus or isn't COVID, an offshoot of COVID-19. There's all kinds of things that are going to happen. And, to me, what it should have done. I remember when I was growing up, my parents went through World War II. So, and the Depression. So, I heard those stories growing up as a kid, and there was always this idea. Now, maybe it was BS. It's entirely possible that they were fooling themselves and that there was this kind of political, back and forth during those crises. Among regular people, I'm not talking about politics at the high level, but just average folks are, having, screaming matches in each other's faces all the time. But they all said, no, the country came together, World War II, let's have Rosie the Riveter, we all pulled together and did what we had to do. And granted, it's World War II, and that's not the same thing as a pandemic. But nonetheless, that idea that in a crisis that the country pulled together and that this is what you do. And, I sort of think that, maybe it was BS, but I know for a fact it didn't happen this time. I mean, in the beginning, there was all that, we were singing for the healthcare workers and going out and clanging pans every night at a certain time. I mean, there was a period there where there was this sense of, we're all in this together, but that fell apart very quickly.
That sort of felt like we were just if the Italians are doing it, we should probably do it too. I mean, there was
exactly.
But also, I mean, you remember 9/11, in that situation, to the extent that the country came together, which I don't think it really did, to be honest with you, but maybe a brief period of time, it was also one. It was an intimidation. right? I mean, there was for dissent, and there was a brief period of time where conservatives pretended like they cared about New York. And that didn't last very long, but let's pivot, because, you know, it very well may be that the outcome of the 2022 midterms is a function of whether there is a new variant before November. I mean, that could be just the single, and, you know, the Biden administration sort of basically made their bet. We're going to pretend like this is over. You know, we'll put in this test and treatment thing, which, you know, who knows is going to take advantage of it, and who knows even knows that it exists, that if you don't watch the news like we do. But they basically made the bet. It's over. And we're going to rip the masks off, and hopefully it works. And if it doesn't, I think their calculation was like, we're not going to get any credit. You know, we're at the mercy of COVID. So we might as well pretend like it's not here and get the credit for it being over if it happens to be over. And if it doesn't happen to be over, then I think it's, you know, I mean, at least they're pushing the vaccine still. But I don't know. That's not what I would have decided. But let's talk about where the Democrats are a little bit, because this is sort of it's a little bit fascinating. We're watching, you know, Joe Biden's numbers went up a little bit over the past couple of weeks. Part, I think, because half of the State of the Union was about Ukraine and Russia. And this is where I think the Biden administration has done a pretty good job with this, frankly. They were proven right in terms of like they're anticipating this invasion. Again, let me just say, I think that anybody who thinks that the invasion is a function of the Biden administration anticipating it is completely out of their minds. And there are people out there who I think are still sort of like clutching to that explanation. But no, they clearly were aware and clearly had intelligence that suggested that Putin was determined to do this. And but they have also been, I think, pretty steadfast in being able to keep the United States out of this. I mean, keep this from escalating, and doing to the extent that they can without that escalation. I mean, in my mind, I think they're doing a pretty good job in that respect. Let's play these two clips though, because I just want to talk about the sort of the pivot that the Republicans have made. But let's play these two clips. Let's play clip number one and two. This is Joe Biden talking at the DNC winter meeting, and one of the things that's coming up is you know, there's this dynamic of not buying Russian oil, and it juicing inflation a little bit, but not. I mean, I think we have inflation. It's a specific type of inflation, and I think it's not a function of monetary policy, but or even overheated economy. I think it's just, you know, it's the pandemic. But here's Biden. This is the way that they are dealing with it. This is a play clip number one.
You know, there's an impediment to production in the United States, and it's called the bankers on Wall Street. This crisis is another indication of why we need to get off dependency on fossil fuels. This is not the solution to today's crisis. It's about the future. That's why we need to build a better America. Let's talk about our record. The American.
Okay. And then he goes on to say, starts to brag in that record about how much oil we are pumping out of the ground after saying we need to stop oil here.
People are already feeling Putin's price hikes at the pump. I think the American people know how important this fight is. I think they know that as painful as the price is today, the costs are going to be higher if we do not act now to deal with this tyrant. So let me be clear on the facts. We are increasing oil production with a record for productivity. By the end of the year, we will have produced more oil than any time in the last number of years. Look, I just want to run. The Republicans are playing a game here. They're talking about the Democrats having raised prices. They all voted for the same thing. The CEOs of major oil companies have said they'll increase investment and production. They have the capacity to do it. They have over 4,000 opportunities. They say there's nothing the U.S. government needs to do to incentivize them.
All right. So the message of we need to get off oil completely lost here, right? When you start bragging about producing more oil, I mean, this conflict is 2 weeks old, 3 weeks old. Why are you bragging about being, you know, producing all this extra oil? Seems to me, and Matt Brunig actually had a piece in the Jacobin just making this point, that we should be nationalizing the oil, or at the very least, Biden should be floating this, because this is the reason why they are not drilling on these lands is for the same reason why, if you're a restaurateur right now, you're not expanding your seating because you're thinking, wait a second, maybe, you know, COVID comes back. I don't want to expend all these resources. Now, the amount of investment in expanding your seating in your restaurant is not nearly what it is if you're going to start to drill. And they don't want to drill that much oil because their profits are maintained when there's a shortage of oil.
Of course.
And they're not drilling. They've got a chokehold on the spigot because it raises their profits. And so the president should be out there saying, let's nationalize this. It won't, of course, happen, but it will start to call the bluff of these people. And instead, he's not calling the bluff. He's getting on the defensive and just stepping all over the whole climate message.
Well, you're absolutely right. And this, you know, in a way, it's a real shame. In fact, Paul Krugman has a good, on his newsletter today, addresses this issue of the rising gas prices and what a farce it is that, you know, first of all, that anybody's being blamed for it. Of course, as you say, it's the, you know, it was the pandemic. What happened was is that during the Obama administration and through the Trump administration, through the first part of it, they were fracking like crazy. That's where the oil production is coming from. And there are a lot of good reasons to be very, very skeptical of all that fracking, as we well know and have discussed for over a decade. When the pandemic happened, the bottom fell out of the oil market. Nobody was driving anymore, you know, for months. The whole world kind of shut down. And, you know, and now it's coming back up. And, of course, as you say, the oil companies and the oil producers around the world are manipulating the oil market and making profits. So the whole idea that you know, this is somehow, you know, short of nationalizing it, which I agree with you would make good sense, there's nothing much more that the government can do about it. I mean, and you're right. If Biden came out and said, hey, you're going to blame me for this stuff, I think maybe the government should take control of it. If I'm going to get the blame anyway, then I'd like to be able to, you know, to be the one who makes these decisions. As it is, I'm not. These are decisions being made by the oil companies, by all the fossil fuel. And it's not just oil. It's all energy all over the place. And now you have this complication of Russia. And the idea also that somehow or another, the U.S. banning Russian oil is a catastrophe for us is ridiculous. I mean, come on. First of all, it's like 3% of America's oil comes from Russia to begin with. And second of all, you know, it's time for Americans to get off the, you know, off the spigot here and get used to the fact that these higher prices are the price we have to start paying in this country. Maybe people will stop buying all these gas-guzzling SUVs and buy electric cars or buy hybrids or do the kind of things that we should have been doing for the last 20 years and never do because gas prices remain at such a low thing. I mean, I'm hearing people whining like little babies over the fact, you know, gasoline hasn't been this high since 2008. And I'm going, can you understand the fatuousness of what you just said? I mean, if it was the same price in 2008, I would suggest maybe this isn't really the problem that you think it is, you know, especially at a time of high employment and, you know, people are making more money and, you know, it should not be this issue that we're dealing with.
I mean, I am sympathetic to the implications of higher gasoline, because it really does impact, people who have to travel for work and, lower income. But what I think is problematic is that the Democrats are not sticking to a consistent message that is consistent during this period versus that period versus the future. You need to stick through with the message. You cannot retreat every moment there is any type of headwinds. And they are doing it. They're doing that both in the context of this inflation stuff, and they're also doing it in the context of the culture war that is being fought right now. And when they do that, it creates a vacuum that the Republicans are able to fill. And they just keep filling it and filling it and filling it. And from the normal voter's perspective, they don't necessarily see the issues as much as they see the dynamic, which is Republicans winning. And we live in a society where the belief is, the winner is the one who wants it more, and they must be right.
Right. I agree with you completely. I think that this idea that, and especially with energy and climate, I mean, that issue more than anything else, every time you have a situation like this, every time you have a crisis, whether it was the pandemic crisis or whether or not it was it's the war in Ukraine or whatever it is, that is the moment for Democrats to seize the day. I mean, Biden said it at first and then he backtracked. What he said at first was absolutely correct. If you want to know, I mean, we can't, what this shows is that, our entire dependence on fossil fuels is a mistake. It's a mistake for the future of the planet. It's a mistake even for our current everyday, sort of stability. And we need to fix this problem once and for all. Every time there's a crisis like that, it's an opportunity for Democrats to make their case. Yes, they have to be flexible. They've got to be able to say it in ways that sort of apply. But nonetheless, you're absolutely right. You don't just change on a dime because the circumstances suddenly make it a little more politically difficult. That is where the problem comes in. And it happens across the board, particularly in that case. But you're right, in the culture war, too. Suddenly people are talking about Dr. Seuss, and everybody gets all upset and, that you've got a bunch of, screaming memes coming into school board meetings and talking about, critical race theory. And the Democrats start, getting all timid and upset and talking about how, well, we really need, what are they calling this? What's the name of this? It's popularism, right?
Right. So,
and what popularism does is says, go with the wind, whichever way the wind is blowing, you need to go with it in order to remain popular. Well, I just don't think that's the way the world works. It just isn't. I mean, that's not, and certainly politics, who can admire politicians who are just, I look at the people who say who followed Donald Trump, for instance. To me, they look like idiots. I mean, I have no respect for them whatsoever. This is just them following a cult leader. But you have to give Trump himself credit for the fact that, I don't think he seems to march to his own drummer. And it really appeals to those people. They like that. They like the fact that he doesn't follow the party line. And we just don't have anything like that. We don't have any kind of.
It's not a question of being following the line or not. I mean, the point that you're making about this theory that the Democrats have, the leadership of the Democratic Party right now.
Right, of course.
That I'm talking about, in the Senate, in the House, in the presidency, and we're talking about the consultant class. And the, after Biden's State of the Union address, the numbers on people who thought that he had a plan to deal, that had confidence in his ability to deal with inflation, shifted 40 points in the course of his speech.
Insane.
And the number of people who think that unemployment is a problem right now, our employment is, we're doing I mean, incredibly well. We're back at almost where we were pre-pandemic, if not already there. And that's with a lot of people having already left the early the job market. So in terms of employment, it's like it hasn't been this good in I don't know how many years, but enough that the fact that most people don't think it's the case is indicative of sometimes it's about the narrative and it's about controlling the narrative. I mean, this is all evidence that points to that, but they ignore it. They ignore it constantly. And what's fascinating is there was a there's two things that I think are going to that impact 2022. One is right now, I think right now, as we speak, Biden is in Philadelphia meeting with the Democrats on their retreat. Retreat is a great word for it. And there is push by we heard it from Clyburn. We heard it from Jayapal. We heard it from other Democrats to push Biden to take executive action on a host of things. I didn't see, you know, student debt in there, but I'm sure someone's pushing that as well, hopefully. And everything ranging from, DACA to voting rights to, any type of like relief for on unemployment or any type of material benefit that Biden can bring, since it's quite clear that the leadership of the Democratic Party has failed. Now, you could argue that like Joe Manchin is just like a Superman, and there was no strategy that ever could have existed in any possible scenario, because Joe Manchin is so set in his ways and has only one set of incentives, and that is a deep, deep abiding ideological or principled stance. Or you could believe that they failed at what their job is, which is to get their own party to vote for their own agenda and figure out a way to do it. But that agenda is dead legislatively, so they're pushing him. And the other sort of thing, it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to that and how they react to it at the White House. And the other thing is the gerrymandering. Just talk about the gerrymandering, because it is not as apocalyptic as we thought it was going to be. In fact, it's better than we thought it was going to be. But it's not. And again, it's not because of chance. It's because people were ringing the bell and it forced Democrats to do something.
Absolutely. It's actually, I mean, I was surprised. I mean, I had been under the impression that it was apocalyptic, that we were just going to, that it was going to be overwhelmingly favorable for the Republicans. And it turned out that it wasn't. And the reason is very interesting. It's because of state courts that, the Republicans tried and they were turned back by state courts, which, has been sort of a backwater in politics. People don't think much about that. And in fact, I think most people probably vote for state, state judges and state Supreme Court judges. And they vote for them, right? It's not like this thing where we have, on the Supreme Court where it's a lifetime appointment. This is actually, it's a political job. And so people vote for them. And as it turns out, even in states that are, dominated by Republicans, the state courts looked at these ridiculous maps that they were producing and said no. And as a result, and surprisingly, and this is probably only going to hold for this one cycle, maybe two if we're lucky, the Supreme Court decided not to intervene in that and allowed the state courts decisions to hold. And as a result, it appears that what we thought was going to happen with an extremely lopsided Republican-dominated House seats, it turns out it's pretty much even. So it's a 50-50, now they seem to be very much, it's going to be a battle. This is going to be mano a mano next fall. But it seems to be very much, strongly held Democrats, strongly held Republicans, most of them, that's a very even split now with very few swing districts in there. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that goes. But it's going to be close for the majority, unless there's some kind of a bizarre blowout that we're not expecting. And that was not in the cards. Now, what the thing that's important to keep in mind about this is that there is this thing called the independent legislature theory, which we've been talking about for some time, which is this idea that somehow or another state legislatures are God when it comes to elections, and they can pretty much do whatever they want. I mean, that's essentially what it is. It's held by its Federalist Society right-wing theory that's basically trying to take the running of elections completely out of the hands of the courts in the states. For this very reason, that courts tend to be more independent than legislatures, and they don't want them to have a say. And we saw that in 2020, where you had the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, for instance. You know, they basically upheld the idea of mail-in voting and various things. And again, this time when they're doing the gerrymandering and redistricting. So the Supreme Court, we know there are three justices. The three, you know, far right wing nuts, Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch, who are definitely in favor of this independent legislator theory, which would allow the state legislature, which would require, actually not allow, require the state legislatures to be the final word, even to the point of perhaps after the election being able to come in and say, look, there's a dispute here. We don't really know who won, so we're going to assign our electors to go to Washington for the presidency. You can see where that's leading, right? So the Supreme Court, there are three, those three justices seem to be in favor. What we don't know is whether Kavanaugh, Barrett, and Roberts, any of, you know, two of those three, are also going to be in favor in the future. I mean, you know, I think it's hard to be optimistic about that, but I guess you never know. Right. But in the meantime, that's the good news for going into this election in the fall, is that it's not as terrible as we thought it was. On the other hand, the Brennan Center, you know, that looks at constitutional issues, just came out with a report yesterday that said that election officials around the country are under extreme pressure, and they are resigning in droves. Apparently, one third of all election officials have resigned, mostly due to intimidation. I mean, that is terrifying. And, you know, we have reports of all of these, you know, kind of dirty tricks and various machinations that are going on a local level. All of this is where Trumpism is now focusing, as we've heard, you know, on a local level is where they're putting all their energy, and they're putting it towards this idea. And you've got Trump out there saying all the time, it's really important who counts those votes. You know, I mean, basically paraphrasing an apocryphal, you know, comment by Joseph Stalin, which, of course, he doesn't know, but I think he'd probably be proud to do it anyway. You know, this is, so we've got two things going on here. You know, on one hand, maybe there's a little sense that democracy sort of has prevailed in a certain way. And another one where you're just finding in this sort of local one-on-one level, it's getting really ugly.
All right. And let me just add one thing to what you said there, too. It was not just the courts, because it was the courts in some states, but in New York State and in Illinois and maybe one or two other places around the country, we had Democrats counter gerrymander.
Right.
So in New York, I think we picked up three congressional seats. In Illinois, two congressional seats. And when we're talking about 218 to 218 in terms of, like, you know, lean Democrat versus lean Republican, you know, we're down to almost like a split Congress. I mean, that's almost where we are right now anyways. Right. But five seats, a pickup of three in New York and a pickup of two in Illinois. And like I said, there's a couple other states. I think that also is a big part of it. You know, so in other words, you folks are going to hear that there was a lot of strum and drang about this and people were wrong, but that is not the case. That's like saying, you know, hey, you were about to get hit by a bus, but that person yelled, "Get out of the way." And they were, why were they so uptight about get out of the way? Because you got out of the way and then you didn't get hit by a bus. Well, I got out of the way from the bus because the person yelled at me. And that's what we were looking at. All right. Well, Heather, we will talk more about this, obviously, in the future. But always a pleasure to catch up with you. And thank you for your patience with us today. We had technical difficulties.
No
and
problem.
Really appreciate it. All right. Stay safe.
There. Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, folks. And when we come back, we're going to talk to, earlier in the week, Was it early in the week or was it yesterday? It was okay. Yesterday, we spoke to Kelly Weil, right? And she wrote a book about flat earthers, and there's this conspiracy. Maybe this guy will take an issue with me calling it a conspiracy. There's this conspiracy that is out there that there are no more birds. And I thought this week would be a good week to have the leader of this movement on the program to discuss his, what I would call, theory that there are no more birds. And in a moment, we'll be back with Peter McIndoe of There Are No Birds. What is it? ThereAreNoBirds.com? Oh, BirdsAren'tReal.com. All right, we'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Joining us is the, and I'm not sure of his specific title, but he is the leader of the movement Birds.
I'm the Public Information Officer for Birds Aren't Real.
The Public Information Officer for Birds Aren't Real, Peter McIndoe. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'd like to ask you, before you control the narrative in this conversation, why are you having me on the show? I know you. I looked you up. I Googled you. I know you're with the media. So why do you?
Well,
you have me on your show to laugh at me?
No. We had it.
Bringing the bird guy on the show to laugh at him?
No. Not bringing you on to laugh at you, Peter. And honestly, there's no reason for you to be that defensive. Brought you on because this week we did have a writer on talking about who had done a extensive book on people who believe in the flat earth theory. And I thought it might be a good follow up to have someone on who believes in another theory. And that theory give you a full opportunity to discuss what that theory is.
I mean, folks, you see how the media does it, you know. You see, I would have preferred maybe to be compared to, hey, look at Guggenheim, who made progressions with the atom, you know. Here's people in history who have done important things. Here's revolutionaries, George Washington. Ever heard of John Adams? But no, I get compared to the flat earth, the people who believe the earth is flat.
Okay. All right. That's a fair critique.
I just want people watching this to see how they do it. They put me up next to the flat earth people and then they have me talk.
Okay. That's a fair critique. I am sorry about that. I will let you, I don't know what controversial, theory that Sam Adams had, or John Adams, or George.
He at the time was very controversial. It was set freedom. That was the name he had. It was very controversial at the time. The Times weren't with it, but you know what he did? He went. He stormed the British gates. He had no fear, and he took over and made the United Land of America. And that was controversial at the time. Well, what I'm doing is controversial, but frankly,
I understand. But I mean, to be fair, Peter, like the idea that you're both controversial is not, I think, a fair comparison. He was controversial because he had an opinion and an ideology, but you are making some factual assertions that, and why don't you tell people what those factual assertions are? I mean, there's no reason to be this combative.
Okay. I just know how the establishment lib media works. Okay. I know you and Al Roker and Chris Cuomo and your big establishment buddies are all hanging out, laughing at the little guy. So, you know, I'm not trying to come on combative. I looked you up. I know that you're with the Turks, the Young Turks. I'm just being cautious. I want to share my ideas. I don't want to come on your show defensive. I'm sorry.
We can play a clip of, can we play the clip, please? This is a clip of, we can do the one from when you were on television on a local station, or we can do, this is from live, like three. What channel three? Channel three, where is this channel? Okay, well, let's just play it.
I consider myself to be an average American. I wake up in the morning, wash my car, and I have an avid disbelief in avian beings.
Maybe you've seen the billboard near the Highland Strip or heard the story on Wednesdays Live at 9. A campaign called Birds Are Not Real brings its efforts to the Mid-South.
And this morning we are joined by one of the messengers of the movement. Peter McIndoe is here to tell us how this all came about. We want to emphasize you were not the founder.
No, ma'am.
We put the billboard here because we wanted to bring it to the biggest city in the world, you know, the Paris of the West. So we brought it to Memphis, Tennessee.
From 1959 through 2001, the government mercilessly genocided over 12 billion birds and simultaneously replaced them with surveillance drones in disguise.
Sometimes I'll travel internationally, go to the Himalayas, just to breathe the drone-free air.
So this is really satire. I mean, you don't really believe that that happened, correct? This is a satirical campaign to make the point that what? you're looking at me like, no, it's not satire. I really do believe this.
Honestly, it's kind of offensive.
Okay.
We do not find this to be a humorous issue.
So there it is. Your assertion is that the United States government has killed all the birds and replaced them with drones. Is that right?
That's right. And as you can see, I've had some bad experiences with the media, you know? So that's where my defensiveness comes from. I'm often brought on to be laughed at. So just coming on with my guard up. But yeah, that is what our movement stands for, if you really want to know. We talk about how the United States government wiped out 12 billion birds. They extinguished them and whisked them out like a light bulb. And, they had crop dusting airplanes. I mean, if you really want to get into the facts, people can look this up, and this is not information that, you know, the media usually wants out there. So, Sam, thanks for giving the platform. Frankly, a lot of your viewers, I know a lot of you are on YouTube looking for truth, like a lot of us. I am too. But the real truth can be found in documents and tapes that only I have access to, along with a couple other people, unfortunately, that reveal that the United States government launched crop dusting airplanes across the United States.
Wait a second. Why do you have access to these documents and only a few other people? Why don't you release these documents?
I mean, these documents were, I mean, we have released some. We released the Poultrygate email leak of early 2021, where huge Hollywood elites, politicians, ever heard of Ted Cruz, were involved in the bird drone surveillance crisis. It revealed a lot. It revealed that they're hollowing out the mountains around America and putting drone factories inside the hollowed out mountains Hollywood elites were involved in the making of the drone factories inside the mountains. I don't know if you're familiar with some would say America's greatest renovator named Ty Pennington from Extreme Home Makeover. The United States government consulted him to renovate the insides of most mountains in America, renovate the mountains, turn them into drone surveillance factories. And if people would turn off their freaking TVs and stop watching these freaking talking heads and actually look into, I mean, the actual research, you know, if you start asking why a couple times, things start falling apart, you know, real quick with the whole bird.
Let me ask, why would you have a drone factory inside a mountain? Why wouldn't you just have it in a drone factory?
Well, you see, Sam, because if you were to have massive bird drone factories with workers out in public, I mean, we're making 12 billion drones here. You know, that's a lot of drones, and that's how many drones.
Don't you need workers in the mountains, in the hollowed out mountains? Isn't it workers doing it in the hollowed out mountains? I mean, what difference does it make if it's in a factory or a hollowed out mountain factory?
A lot of land space. I mean, it takes an incredible amount of land mass. I mean, to make one bird drone, it takes, you know, roughly 10 by 10 yards for the machinery required. So we're talking. Imagine if you hollowed out the Appalachian Mountains, truly, how much landmass there would be under that. You don't think people are tapped into that? Yeah, you don't think some people have stumbled upon doorways? Have you seen the clips? Oh, going on a little hike. Went on a little hike. I'm on the side of the mountain. Oops, stumbled upon a doorway. This happens to people all the time. What?
Where can I see the clips of people stumbling onto doorways in the Appalachian Mountains?
Oh, I mean, you have to do your own research. I don't know. I mean, I know you're probably on, you know, the big media websites, but man, there's a lot of great information out there. I really just get my information from birdsaren't real.com because that's the one that I know I can trust. My website, yeah. I do put the information. I mean, it's not my information. I'm the one who goes on Squarespace and puts it on the website, but it's legitimate documents and emails.
You said that's the one place that you go to find information that you trust. You put the information up there.
Yeah, I don't trust anybody but myself.
My understanding is that you are also having a rally that is upcoming, the Media Freedom March.
The Media Freedom March, yeah, it's coming up. We're excited about it. We had a lawsuit against the New York Times that was pretty highly publicized. I launched a full-fledged attack against the New York Times. They released a defamatory story about us. And you know what, Sam? I don't take that lightly. When the media, I'm just saying, man, I'm coming on this show expecting to be bashed. I'm standing in front of you right now, Sam, with 10 flaming arrows in my back. I've had the worst 3 months. The media's come after me from every angle. They're calling us a parody. They're calling us a joke. They're calling me some kind of jokester. And you know, I don't think they would do that to any other movement around right now. So we launched lawsuits. We launched lawsuits for libel. That's what you do when you get lied about on a mass platform. I reached out to my lawyers, Mo and Marley at Lieberman and Reese, and we got some stuff together and formally sued CNN and formally sued the New York Times. I was feeling really confident about it. I was feeling really good. But then we got this email from the New York Times General Counsel office that I didn't really understand that kind of brought me down to earth. And we had to retract the lawsuit today, which sucks. But we are redirecting our energy outside of suing the corporation. We placed a curse on the journalist that smeared us, an ancient curse. That's going to bring her pain in her life and suffering for generations. And I hope it does cause her a fraction of the suffering she's caused me. Because when you lie about people on the front page of the New York Times, you know what that does to a man? Laughed out in the streets.
Yeah, I can imagine, but I don't think that you are on the front page of the New York Times.
Look it up. See, this is the thing about lib media. This is the thing about the establishment lib media. Hey, if anybody's around the house, can you bring me a copy of the New York Times? They don't do their research. If you look it up, we were on the front page of the New York Times being blatantly lied.
Who are you calling to bring you a page of the New York Times?
No, I've got some staff around here. We're around an Airbnb where we're organizing. We're doing some plans for the Media Freedom March that's coming up. Because that's the thing. The media comes after you. They smear your name. Okay. How can you fight back? So you sue. You sue them. But then, they have more money and you don't have a case. Oh, you don't even have a case. Blah, 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 blah. You know? And then it goes from that to what else are you supposed to do except take to the streets, Sam? Except get out in the streets. And I'm going to bring my van. I'm going to bring my sign. And I'm going right to where I know all the media lives, probably where you have a house on this street I hear about over in Hollywood called Hollywood Boulevard.
All right. Well, listen, let me just say I did not realize that there was, in fact, an article, and I apologize.
Thank you.
December 10th, 2021, Section A, page one. Is this true?
Page one.
Conspiracy with wings and a wink. Okay. All right. Well, then I stand corrected. I want to make that clear.
Proven wrong once again by the truthers who will continue to tell the truth while the media will lie to you. Folks, I want you to think about this guy you're watching every day. This guy you're watching every day just told you a lie right in front of the guy he's lying about. And then did a quick Google search. And I respect you for retracting. I had to retract something today. It happens in life. You know, I had to retract a lawsuit today. It happens. But I just want people to treat us with a bit more respect and look at this pain and war that I've been brought through in the past 3 months where the entire media is ripping me apart all over the place. Then you try to sue them. You get told that you would actually get sued because you're committing the actual libel. And then... So we're holding a Media Freedom March, a protest on Hollywood Boulevard. We're taking the fight to the media's front door on March 30th at 5:30 Pacific time. And anybody's invited. It's on Hollywood Boulevard. We're going to be out inside of the Chinese Theater. I'm going to be there with my van. And I'm just going to, you know, hey, since they won't let my voice be heard in the courtroom, it'll be heard on the streets. It'll be heard on the streets. I want the streets of Hollywood to shake so much that the letters come tumbling down. The Hollywood sign letters come tumbling down from the hills like an avalanche.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. And it's birdsaren'treal.com. Is that right?
Birdsaren'treal.com. Come there for the only true sources of information you can find anywhere right now.
Okay. Well, Peter McIndoe, thank you. Thank you for coming on and interesting theory.
Thanks.
All right. Whew. Wow. Boy. Okay. There you go. Between the 101 and the 5, ask him about the bird's feather in his hat. Isn't that evidence of the existence of birds? And it's a good point. I was admittedly thrown off by the New York Times article. Didn't realize. Well, birdsaren'treal.com. Folks can check that out. I don't know if I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. I'm quite convinced that birds aren't real. I mean, birds are real, excuse me. But, yeesh. All right. We're going to have a short and fun half today. So we'll do a freebie Friday. We lost an hour today. People are saying that the sound was good for that guy and wanting to know why the sound was good for that guy, but no one else for the entire week. So that's what it's conspiracy. Weird. Sort of wanted not, couldn't hear the woman who wrote about the conspiracy theorist, but you could hear the conspiracy theorist. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Sailor from Discordia. Guys, please let Peter McIndoe be a regular guest on Friday so he can keep us to date on the bird genocide updates from way back. And boogers are not real. Why is the audio from every single guest this week been garbled, but this guy's, he's coming through loud and clear. Conspiracy theory. Maddie Light, I'm actually feeling bad for this dude. I don't think he's a jokester. I think there's serious mental issues and he's delusional and believes these things. It's kind of not funny. Socialist Bear, holy shit, this joke is 6 years, was old 6 years ago. We get it. Birds aren't real. Sorry, after the last several years of nut jobs and power denying reality, there isn't really anything funny about this guy. Reality is more satirical than this guy. Chardonnay Socialist says, birds are definitely not real. I feel that you need to spread the word via my chest and back. Are you guys going to print more of these sold-out T-shirts on your website anytime soon? North Dakota Llama. Sam, this is your CIA handler. Cease this interview. The man knows too much. Please eat the batch of cookies we will be sending over shortly. Semper Fi. Paulina. Hey, MR crew, the address is correct, and it's the city address of the city hall in Przemyśl. I'm sure the folks on the border will appreciate this stuff. My family in Krakow are caring for 18 people staying in a small guest house. My mom's runs. The situation is dire, and there's very little support from the international community. Either way, we're okay. The way Polish people open their homes to the Ukrainians is incredible. Remind me on Monday, and we'll give that address again. Hilldog 2024 forever. I hear Jimmy Dore is really sore at the fact that he can't get the birds aren't real guy on his show. Militant apathy. Where is his family? This is some next level Kanye West type shit. Dude needs an intervention. So someone says, what am I eating when I'm eating chicken? That's a good point. Ray says, Sam, it was nice meeting you last night at Francesca's show. Thank you. Hope you found those articles on Jalopnik about leaded gasoline. I have it actually, the browser open right now. Also, it was interesting to see some of the IMers in real life, like Train Boy was there last night. See you and the MR crew on the 26th. And again, if you cannot make it live to the Brooklyn live show, you can go to majoritylive.com, click through the link as if you were buying a ticket for the live show, and you can buy a ticket for the live streaming show of the Brooklyn show. However, you first want to stop off at amquickie.com and sign up for the email newsletter, because when you do, you will get an email the next day and you will find a coupon code that will more than halve the price of the live show from $12.50 or $12 to $5 for the live show streaming it. So check it out. I don't feel like we need to apologize for having that birds aren't real guy on. Maybe we need to apologize to him. Although, you know, the New York Times has written about him. He's a real person. I mean, but we did our best to sort of like try and have him establish his points well and not be caught up in whatever he believes. I'm not the only person who does that. Sean Hannity had Donald Trump on and really doing his best, Sean Hannity, to attempt to, I love the picture they put up, doing his best to steer Trump away from embracing Vladimir Putin and other dictators, because that's a bad look right now. Because Putin is not only, I mean, there's, you know, there's been reports as to how much the Russian soldiers knew when they were going in. I don't know that this necessarily exonerates them, but Russia has been bombing indiscriminately civilians and causing an enormous amount of pain and suffering
for what I think the vast majority of people in the world, to the extent that they're aware of it, understand as having no legitimate, I don't know if there is ever a legitimate reason to do so, but certainly in this instance, nothing even close to approximating a legitimate reason to do so. So much so that, Lavrov, the foreign minister, is it, of Russia, claimed that Russia didn't invade Ukraine. You don't need to do that unless you're worried that your people will find out. Here is Sean Hannity interviewing Donald Trump, putting up the picture of Donald Trump. He's a very serious guy. And here it is, Hannity desperately trying to get the president, you know, set him straight here, or at least to get him save him from himself.
Let me go back then to the issue of the criticism, because I've known you well over 25 years. And when you got criticized for saying that Vladimir Putin is smart, we've had many conversations. And you've often quoted to me Sun Tzu, The Art of War, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Is that how you viewed Vladimir? Did you view Vladimir Putin and people like President Xi and Kim Jong-un and the Iranian mullahs as enemies that you needed to keep close?
I got along with these people. I got along with them well. That doesn't mean they're good people. It doesn't mean anything other than the fact that I understood them and perhaps they understood me. Maybe they understood me even better. That's okay, because they knew there'd be a big penalty. In North Korea, I got along with Kim Jong-un. When I first came into office, as you know, President Obama met me in the Oval Office. He said, we're going to probably, the biggest problem you have is North Korea. We're going to end up in a war with North Korea. Could be a nuclear war. We had no problem with North Korea. I got along with him well. We understood each other. I got along with Putin. I got along with Xi. They understood.
There was never going to
be a takeover of Taiwan. There was never going to be a takeover of Taiwan.
I want to understand your thinking, though. And the thinking is we got along, but you knew that they were looking out for their interests at all times.
100%. Yeah.
And you understood 100%. That they were capable of evil things.
Putin is for Russia. And you see what happened. And that's all because they didn't respect our leader. Look, there was nobody, and Putin would tell you this if he was telling the truth, and I'm sure he sold it to all of his inner sanctum. Nobody was tougher on Russia than me. I closed down the pipeline.
Poor Sean Hannity, desperately attempting. But when you say you kept them closer, I mean, like you, they were evil, right? Well, I mean, he's working for Russia. Desperate. This is not even, this is attempting to lead the witness, right? Like you can take him like right up to the water, will not drink. I got along with some of the worst people in the world. In fact, I felt seen. I felt seen, Sean, for the first time. Somebody saw me for me. They probably knew me better than I knew them. It's one of the first times I've ever been seen for me, from who I am, from me guy. like, it's still, like, this is Hannity, like, Mr. President, please, I'm doing my best here. They saw me, Sean. I don't know what to tell you. You know, I remember George Bush also back in the day looked into Putin's eyes. I could tell he was a good man. I could look into his eyes. That's what he said. Was the quote?
It looked into his eyes and saw his soul.
I saw his soul. And apparently it was good. That is pretty impressive. It's nice. May everyone have someone who is going to guide them like Sean Hannity tried to in that interview with Donald Trump. Don't they talk beforehand? I mean, I guess like Hannity, like can't even. Trump won't listen to him. It's almost like if you're Hannity, you almost have to say the opposite. Maybe you should come on today and talk about how great Putin is while he is slaughtering civilians. Did George W. Bush call him Pooty Poot, or did we just, I feel like Janine made that up.
Yeah, I think that's...
we used to call him Pooty Poot. Pooty Poot. All right, let's move from one Fox celebrity trying to get Donald Trump to speak well, and let's check out Fox Laura Ingraham. Look, we mentioned this with Digby up front. The Republicans are pushing this culture war, and the Democrats are backing away from it, and it is a massive mistake. Laura Ingraham started her professional journalism career at Dartmouth College. I think she was working on the student newspaper, and she would out gay students. That was her journalistic project, outing gay students at Dartmouth. This was at a time where it was, many people were still in the closet because society was so viciously anti-gay, particularly, I think this was during AIDS. And here is Laura Ingraham. The more things change, the more they stay the same for her. She is mad that people are pushing back on the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida. Again, if you are gay and you are married or you have a partner, you cannot reference this to children under the age of, what is it, 7, I think it is. It's absurd. It's absurd. Play this clip.
Get down with yourself, explore your own body. Masturbation is really healthy, and I recommend it to people of all ages. All ages. As soon as my nephews could talk, they were doing that.
This has been my first year in preschool with a class of my own, teaching alongside another queer neurodivergent educator, and we have been rocking our two's class. We've been talking about gender and skin color and consent and empathy and our bodies and autonomy. It's been fabulous.
Oh my God. When did our public schools, any schools, become what are essentially grooming centers?
Pause it for 1 second. Now, first off, those two clips are not of people who are teaching at public schools, because we do not have universal pre-K in this country. But even if they were, notice the chyron. Liberals are sexually grooming elementary students. Now, I don't know what that means, sexually grooming, because the vast, overwhelming majority of these elementary students are going to grow up and be sexual. That's what happens with human beings. The vast, overwhelming majority of them, at least those that are well-adjusted, for the most part, end up being sexual in some fashion. So I don't know what sexually grooming means, but here she is.
Or gender identity radicals. As a mom, I think it's appalling. It's frightening. It's disgusting. It's despicable. Florida just passed a bill to keep this type of sexual brainwashing out of schools. Democrats, though, claim the bill is bigoted, branding it as the Don't Say Gay bill. Well,
pause it for 1 second.
The
pause
real controversy.
Pause it for 1 second. How do you think the Supreme Court ruling that gay people can get married will stand if what she's saying, that you cannot, it's disgusting to speak of gay people being married or having lovers, that it's outrageous, that it's wrong, that it's some form of grooming. I mean,
This is the same stuff that she was peddling in the 80s when she was outing students as being gay, which is this notion that if you expose kids to gayness, that they're going to be converted into gay. I mean, understand, this is where this is going. This is not just about, if you can't say that you are legally married to someone, to six-year-olds, because it's in some way despicable or whatever it is, how long do you think it is before they come from the right, for the right to marry? Continue.
See, though, isn't this bill? It's that schools are peddling gender ideology when our international rankings in math, science, and reading are down across the board. Joining me now is Keisha King, Florida mother and executive director of Moms for America. Keisha, is this a battle that's turning what we used to call the soccer mom vote into the culture mom vote?
Well, Laura, I think what's happening is that parents are being pushed aside. It is changing culture, and it's definitely what I am seeing is that parents are not being considered when these ideologies and these changes are trying to be made. They want to take control of our children. That is definitely what I see when I see these types of this pushback for bills like this. I do not understand why teachers or administrators would come out so strongly against something as simple as saying we don't want sexual identity and gender identity to be taught to kids as young as 4 and 5 years old. Pause. This is simple. Okay.
We don't
this
need
is
any more of this. I mean, you know, put up that article that Moms for America was literally go put this up. Oh, hold on. Put that up. She's worried about free speech in the CRT fight. She's worried about free speech. Don't put up the video. She's worried about free speech. But also now upset about the pushback on a law that says if you're a teacher, you cannot talk about the fact that you're married if you're gay. The bottom line is that sex ed teachers will tell you 6 years old is when you should be actually teaching your kids about actual sex, not just the idea that there is existence, that men can marry men or men can love men or women can marry women or women can marry can love women, or that they can be partners, but actual like sex. That is not, it's age appropriate. Kids at that point are aware that babies do not come from storks. But this isn't a question of teachers going in there and talking about sex acts as much as it is about, like, that's your body. You have autonomy over it. Men can love men. Women can love women. Women can love men. Men can love women. They just don't want to acknowledge the existence of gay people. They don't want to normalize it. They don't want to acknowledge its existence. They don't want to recognize that they have rights. That's what this is about. And Laura Ingraham has been on this beat for 40 years. Since she was in college. 30 years. She's a bigot. And they're all on this. This is the most important thing that's happening in the country right now, is this sudden onslaught that the right seems to be aware of, that the gays are coming for our children. This is the same way that George Bush won his re-election in 2004. This is all they have. And the Democrats, the left, the liberals, whoever's in opposition to this, or the Republicans, should be making an example of Florida and Ron DeSantis and should be talking about it as much, if not more, than they're talking about it on the right. Here's Stuart Vonnegut on Fox Business News. They're pushing it as a parents' rights in education bill because of what they think the message was out of Virginia. And in fact, it is not a parents' rights in education. It is a diminishment of the rights of teachers. It is a diminishment, really, of the rights of teachers who are gay. Play this clip. Oh, and let's bring on an expert on this stuff. Where can we find somebody like, I don't know. It's, I mean, this stuff isn't brain surgeon stuff, but let's get a brain surgeon.
The Florida Senate passed a bill restricting teachers and school districts from discussing sexuality and gender identity with children in kindergarten through third grade. Dr. Ben Carson joins me now. Doctor, straight at it. Do you think five-year-olds should be instructed on their own sexuality in elementary schools?
Well, of course not. You know, their brains aren't, you know, prepared to handle those kinds of complex topics right now. You know, growing up, you know, it's supposed to be a fun time, not a time when you're presented with a lot of confusing information.
Pause. And, what confusing information? Does Dr. Ben Carson think there's a child out there who's 5 years old who isn't aware that they have sexual organs? Is Dr. Ben Carson think there's a five-year-old out there who isn't aware that, like, babies come from, like, mom and dads or, you know, or I should say adults having sex? Obviously, you don't go into, you know, any more than you would when you're talking about writing or reading. And we should say, there's nothing about these conversations that in any way inhibit the teaching of writing and reading, which, you don't do it. You know, five-year-olds maybe just starting to get the idea of reading, just like handling books and being read to. But let's go back to the brain surgeon.
Prepared to handle those kinds of complex topics right now. You know, growing up, you know, it's supposed to be a fun time, not a time when you're presented with a lot of confusing information. And, you know, there are a lot of adults who don't even understand sexuality.
That is very, very true. I feel like we're watching two of them right now. Maybe the reason why the adults don't understand it is because they were not taught it in schools.
A young child with something like that. And these are the kinds of things that parents are there for. They're not the kinds of things that schools are there for.
The LGBTQ community is upset about this. Does that matter at all to you?
Well, the LGBTQ, whatever, yes, they matter. Everybody matters. But that has nothing to do with whether we are confusing our young people. This is not a matter of politics. This is a matter of common sense. And what is school for? It's so that we can teach our young people how to manage in a complex world. That means they need to be good readers. They need to be able to handle mathematics. They need to understand history.
What happened to having fun? What happened? Like, they don't need these complex, like the basics of human sexuality are too complex, but math and history, going to teach those five-year-olds history. The LBQTG.
Whatever, they matter.
Whatever, they matter. Everybody matters. Everything matters. This is what's happening. And granted, they're just speaking to their own people. But the fact of the matter is that they are dominating the narrative over stuff that the vast majority of Americans have no issue with. Have no issue with. And Democrats, the left, whatever you want to call it, should be meeting these people and within this narrative and pushing back on it and actually going further than that, going on the offense. These people want to send us back to dark ages. That's it. Getting out there and saying, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, that we're drilling as much oil as we've ever had. It's just, I don't know who that's supposed to appeal to. It's nuts. Absolutely nuts. This is also more of it right here. This People's Convoy. First of all, there's virtually no convoy. Second of all, they're protesting something that doesn't exist. Here's Ted Cruz. He is a senator of our federal government. None of these people are subjected to any type of federal mandate that are sitting there. None of them. Here's Ted Cruz talking about the mandates. And he's asked whether he believes the COVID vaccine has saved lives. And it's one of those things like, do you think climate change is real? I'm not a scientist. What are you? What can you speak to? You can't tell if vaccines work. You're a senator of the United States senator. Billions of dollars have been spent by the U.S. government in the development of these vaccines. You have no sense of whether they work?
Senator, do you believe the vaccine has saved lives?
Look, I hope so. I'm not a doctor. You know what? Why would you take medical advice from me? I wouldn't take medical advice from me. I'm not in the business of giving medical advice. Go talk to your physician if you want to figure out whether you should take the vaccine or not. I hope we have good doctors and good scientists that are figuring that out. And I'm sure we're going to be debating and looking at the effects.
We are debating and looking at the effects. You haven't looked at the effects. We've spent billions of dollars, U.S. tax dollars, on the development and the distribution of these vaccines. Billions of dollars. Billions. Vaccines have been being used now for over a year. Where is the follow-up question on this? Why aren't you doing your job? You're not looking at the effects of how we've spent billions of dollars? This guy's just watching Joe Rogan's show and just basically almost verbatim. Why would you take medical advice from me? I'm giving it. But I don't know why anybody would listen to me about it. Well, you're also a senator who's in charge of the distribution of our money. You don't have an opinion on how we've spent those billions of dollars? It's insane. Ted Cruz should be the first thing that people think about when we say the word Republicans. Donald Trump, Ted Cruz. But the Democrats just don't know how to make the Republicans own their worst elements. And frankly, there's no less than worse elements. They just don't have to own any of it. This is not a question even of ideology or doesn't forgive how corporatized the Democrats are, doesn't forgive their failure to legislate, to figure out the Democratic leadership and how to get that one vote from Joe Manchin. This is just basic politics. Basic politics. If you make the other person's brand toxic, it's going to increase the chances of you being able to pass legislation. That's it. That's the equation. The idea that Joe Manchin would side with Republicans is only available to him because the Democrats have done a poor job in making the Republican brand as toxic as it should be. Kristen Sinema can only get away with thinking that she can run as some type of like maverick Democrat because the Democrats have failed to make the people of Arizona realize how toxic Republicans are. That's it. That's the equation. This is just basic politics. Here's Andrew Callahan. Let's play just a little clip of this. Andrew Callahan, who went and talked to some people in the People's Convoy. This is Channel 5 is his YouTube show. It's pretty amazing.
How you doing, man? What kind of music do you make?
You know, hair metal type stuff.
What do you think about what's going on over in Ukraine?
Don't trust the media about whatever they spin on it, but I mean, you look at certain things, like we shouldn't have anything to do with it at all. Let them figure out their own mess.
Putin is doing the right thing. He's taken out the Kassarian mafia. The man's not an evil man. Here's the thing. The media is doing what they're doing and sharing the, excuse my French, the crap about him because he's over the target.
Do you think there's even a war going on out there?
No, not at all.
It's confusing to me because it seemed like just like 6 to 8 months ago, people talked about Putin like he was a socialist, communist dictator. And now it seems that people are pretty sympathetic and supportive of Putin. Why has this change occurred?
Well, the deep state has always made Putin to look like the bad guy. But he's a good guy. He's taken out all the biolabs, child trafficking areas, adrenochrome harvesting areas. If people would have watched when Trump came into office right at the beginning, when you saw them hand that soccer ball off, that soccer ball had so much information in it to take down everybody that Putin's been getting all the intel on for years. It had a lot of data in it. Uh-huh. And that's what's going on. I hate the fact that people are dying over this World War III, but unfortunately, it's going to happen.
Can you tell us about your shirt?
Well,
we don't need to. I think we get the idea. You know, like, I'll tell you something. The bar has moved so much as to what, like, you know, and this is the way that it's been going for 20 years. You talk about the lunatics in the Idaho state legislature or the Georgia state legislature or the Florida state legislature 20 years ago, and people are like, why are you focusing on one lawmaker bringing up a bill? Or the bill didn't pass. And then 10 years later, the bills start passing. And 12 years later, these people are in the White House or they're in Congress or they're a senator. And now the bills are passing all over. And now they're sitting on the Supreme Court. These guys, these Q guys, just like we were talking about the Tea Partiers 10 years ago, who then all ended up in Congress. My prediction is this: 10, 15 years, this dude or some dude like him is going to be congressperson from 20%, 10% of the Republican districts in the country. I'm telling you, this is where it's going to head. So right now we look at him and he's a lunatic talking about andochromany or whatever that thing is when you like boil kids or whatever it is. Kids are harvested for adrenochrome. And in 10 years, he will be introducing in like the state, you know, 5 years, he'll be introducing in some state legislature somewhere the andochrome bill where you can't have, I mean, couldn't have Sharia law. They were passing legislation. There was no Sharia law anywhere. They're going to be passing anti-andochrome legislation in 3 or 4 years in some of these state houses. I'm telling you. And then dude's going to be a congressperson. That's what's going to happen. Completely nuts. All right, let's read some IMs and let's get out of here. The New York Times article quotes McIndoe and he says it is satire, but holy hell, he does not let that on. What? Stop it. Ray, Sam, it was now, oh, yeah, did that. Charlie Kirk Cameron. A year ago, I said Tulsi Gabbard was posturing to be Trump's running mate in 2024. Get ready for the inevitable Trump-Gabbard-Putin ticket. Tojo's bald. They escalated it by baiting Putin. Who's making more money? Sanctions are war, and it just kills like bullets. Trump is uneducated, just like Putin. Okay. Daredevil. The Salvation Army is being sued for paying workers as little as $1 an hour under the guise of therapy. Workers are required to work 40 hours a week and sleep in dorms. What? Missing shifts, even due to injury, may expel workers from this program that may be mandated as alternative to prison sentences. Oh, Jesus. Left is best. Oh, man, this bird guy. I would have asked him what it would take for him to believe birds are real. Haircut hippie. Is it Groundhog Day? Emma's Vegan's Yard Sign. Bradley and company deserve a medal. Of course, technical issues happen, but I was going to be so bummed this afternoon. Yes, good job, guys. Militant apathy. He did this. Dude is full on psychosis. This was Big Bird replacing Sam with an android that will carry out their agenda. Cheers to Bradley and Dorsey. What did you plan to drink tonight? Says Nightmare BC Rotation. GW, I'd like to think that Sam had a Bill O'Reilly style meltdown yelling, "We got to go live," while making threats to Brandon and Dorsey over the commissary. I mean, privileges. I mean, that's not too far from what happened. John. Hey, tried watching today's show on YouTube and only played for 4 minutes of it. Just wanted to let you know. Yes, thank you. Presmil, Chemishle. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm supposed to be pronouncing. Speaking to your fantastic accident interview, I work for a big fashion retailer that rhymes with Nordstrom and once encountered a higher up who expressed disbelief and dismay at the amount of workplace injuries that occurred here. How he saw less of it in working in big industry factories in Canada and followed it up with a long talk about needing to see an increase in productivity, not by better processes or paying folks what they deserve, but by threatening livelihoods for not meeting unrealistic metrics. Always remember, ghouls with big hearts are still ghouls. That being said, can I get a birthday for Shofar? Baba Booin since 86. All right. Connor from Seattle. Flat Earth isn't the only conspiracy to be born from fictional literature. The idea that aliens built the pyramids was posited by a fanfic sequel to H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds called Edison's Conquest of Mars, written in 1989. The concept of aliens building ancient structures was taken further in 1968. Chariots of the Gods, a pseudoscientific nonfiction likely on the bookshelves of Joe Rogan fans across the world. Lastly, even conspiracies like this that might seem harmless need to be cautioned because they often have origins of racism or white nationalism. Alien conspiracies are mostly associated with non-European societies because those that created them could not see these ancient non-Europeans as being advanced enough to create such sophisticated structures. That's all. Love the show. Oh, like the Mayan pyramids or something like that. Balsamic reduction. I think this is the very best video quality we've ever had from Digby. She looks great. Sam, looking like a dumpster fire as usual. JK, just keep up the great stuff. But left is best. Not my Pope. Sam, longtime listener, couple time caller, first time member. You should look into having Amanda Little on the program. She had a book from 2019 called The Fate of Food, which explores the effects of climate change on our food systems. The first chapter, all about apples. Shabbat shalom. Check out Amanda Little. Will you just write that down for me? Thanks. Wayne Kerr. Thank goodness Biden is president, or I don't know if Kamala or CIA Pete would hold out against the press and Mike to not escalate more with Russia. J-Man Raps. Hey, Sam, it's amazing how devastating this pandemic has been, yet we still have anti-vax scumbags like Joe Rogan or Brett Weinstein spreading misinformation. We can never let them or others forget about the harm they cause society. Nicole from Buffalo, as a young person coming of age during this pandemic and losing family members to it, I feel like my generation is going to be dealing with the emotional and societal fallout of COVID for the rest of our lives. It's going to permeate the collective consciousness for a long time. I think you're right about that. Just wonder how much it'll be articulated. Have you read my email? The mask mandate has been lifted here in the Netherlands for about a month, and I am one of the very, very, very few still wearing one. It's actual insanity. We had a holiday week, for example, and people went on skiing holidays, and the numbers are exploding again. There are moments when I think I'm the one that's crazy. I'm waiting for the day someone files a complaint against me for wearing a mask. It pisses me off. I can understand that. I mean, I still wear masks. In this building, there's no mandate anymore. Some of the people who work here wear masks. Some people don't. No, I'm not talking about in the studio. I'm talking about in the building. I come through in masks, and it's getting to be that point where you're like, oh, wait a second. I'm the guy wearing the mask. But guess what? Who cares? I remember how weird it was to see people wearing masks back prior to the, like, I mean, where you see someone on the train, like, why are they wearing the mask?
Oh, yes. Back when SARS, you know, I lived in San Francisco. I'd see it all the time, and you'd just be like, wow, does that work? Or, you know, I didn't even think about it.
Nope. All right, five more of these. Socialist Bear. No, you already read that one. Carl Sagan. Sorry you were saving this. I guess you were saving for Friday. And Troma. Got to disagree with those saying this guy is delusional. I'd bet anything. He has a BA in acting, says in Troma. Sam Soft-Collared Shtick. With the invasion of Ukraine, the response from Trump and certain Republicans in government media, I feel like those who were warning of Trump-Russia connection are vindicated. Could you have a guest on to tie this up as Sarah Kendazor from Gaslit Nation podcast or Seth Abramson? Not sure if you know of them. I'm familiar with Kendazor. Buttersnatch. What was up with that grade A sort of... Okay. How many times are you going to ask that same question? What a hunk Alex Salmon is. Jones, the space cat. So wait, have the windmills been destroying the drones? Interesting theory. Could have asked them that. Eddie Munster, would be nice to know an hour ago that you decided to go live at 2:19. Yeah, well, I know. We did. I tweeted it out. I don't know what to tell you. Your favorite employer. If birds aren't real, how come you can explain where babies come from? Bob from Dedham, continuing on the conspiracy thing. Laura Ingraham, conservatives, idea that saying gay will make kids gay. Isn't that the half step from Alex Jones' theory that the U.S. government is turning frogs gay? Sam, Twitter, etc., was great, and also the name of the Great Woods in Mansfield for a bit. But did you ever go to Cambridge Soundworks? Yeah, I knew that place, but whatever. AOD, the bird's not real guy, is much more enjoyable than Hinkle. Fair enough. Affluence, wretchedness. We've got to fight against this don't say gay shit and then fight for genuinely comprehensive, inclusive, age-appropriate sex ed. I had by far the best sex ed of anyone I know, all girls school, in terms of the breadth and accuracy of information. That curriculum still didn't acknowledge the existence of queer women beyond a screening of If These Walls Could Talk Too. Pleasure barely got a mention. Kids and teens deserve better, especially queer kids who have to seek out accurate info on their own because of their sexual well-being matters less than Laura Ingraham's feelings. Indeed. Totally agree with all of that. All right, two more. Prairie Fire Kowalski, howdy, Sam and MR crew. It seems concerning that the right-wing media in the United States still trying to rehabilitate the image of Putin. International right-wing solidarity is disturbingly strong. Also, just because the talking point has been making the rounds again, somehow Ukraine's sovereignty isn't real because it's a fake country. To that, I would just like to say all countries are fake. We made them up. So if Russia decides it was illegal for the czars to have sold Alaska, are we just supposed to abandon it? This line of thinking is very dangerous. Left is best. And the final IM of the week. Brooklyn Sue. Sam, no joke. I've really enjoyed just hearing you spout off long form this week. I've missed that, and I bet others had too. Thank you, Bradley, Dorsey. Appreciate you guys dealing with all of these technical snafus. No, it's been a hard week. Guys did a very good job maintaining I could use a lesson in terms of maintaining my equilibrium in those instances. Sometimes it takes just a little time for me to. I didn't throw anything. I'm very proud of myself about that. I didn't punch any walls. Dorsey has seen some of that in the past. Folks, see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Know how far the detour takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in and out of-